Angela, as a yada tata, true fire sata, pick up your chest, revolutionary data, pull up your Ghana and in the dance hall, flip up your life, that's it for me.
Welcome back to KPFK 90.7 FM. This is Eric Mann on the 4 o'clock Voices from the Frontline segment. And the next conversation is going to be with Ty Geltmaker, who's a longtime activist in the gay and queer movement. He's been involved in ACT UP, and he wrote a really good op-ed called Be My Valentine, Just Don't Marry Me. That was not published in the LA Times. In fact, I think, Ty, we could make a really good book called Not Published in the LA Times Op-Eds, because some of the best op-eds are the ones they've rejected, mine included. Are you listening, Ty? Are you there?
Yes, I am, Eric. Hi to you and to Damon.
Nice.
Let me just make one quick correction. It was not published in the New York Times. I was about to send it to the LA Times upon being rejected by the New York Times.
Okay, so we'll good luck with the LA Times. I'll just read a little bit about it. I mean, obviously, I want to frame the subject after I read this, but I think some of your stuff, I want to read the rest, first and last graph, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
Do you have in front of you, Ty?
Where is my copy?
Because otherwise you could read it, and you'll sound, otherwise I'll read it.
I have it in front of me, yeah.
Why don't you do the first and last graph? I think they're really great.
Okay. As you said, this was titled, Be My Valentine, Just Don't Marry Me. And it was written before Valentine's on the thought that it might make Valentine's Day publication. In any case, this Valentine's Day, my lover, no, not my partner, since we are lovers, not a business, and he and I will look at each other and toast our dogged commitment over 23 years of living together, one of us HIV positive, and congratulate ourselves for never having asked each other to get married. It's our personal version of don't ask, don't tell. Since we have long believed that gay marriage is the right but the wrong thing to do. And then the final paragraph was, as the late historian John Boswell has shown, same-sex unions were common in pre-modern Europe. Why can't this precedent be a model for civil unions, which do not claim religious blessing? Plenty of people are, quote, married in civil unions outside of any church. This has been true for decades, and no one challenges the civil marriages of divorced persons, like former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, whose Roman Catholic Church officially denies the validity of marriage after divorce. More to the point, why aren't all citizens guaranteed the same socioeconomic rights from cradle to grave, regardless of marital status? And I ended, so please don't marry me. I'll just be your Valentine.
Well, very interesting. And Ty, in terms of your op-ed and your point of view, I mean, one of the things... you coming from, if I could say, the left wing and the more progressive wing of the gay and queer movement, it's interesting that we have this sort of historical dilemma, because on one level, when you see that San Francisco as the first city that's and county in the United States to recognize same-sex marriages, and you see the front page of two lesbian women, both in their 80s, getting married and tears of joy coming down their eyes, I was moved to tremendous tears and joy as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know you do too.
I don't want to rain on anyone's parade.
Right. So on one level, we know that this is a fantastic fight for the so-called full equality rights that have been denied GLPT people.
Right.
On the other hand, it's also interesting to listen that as I was listening today to people, in this case, a lesbian trying to defend and explain her right to this civil right, she said, you know, we're old enough to fight, we're legally allowed to fight for this country, we're legally allowed to pay taxes. I thought, why does everybody in the country have to justify their civil rights by going to fight somewhere in an imperialist war? I mean, can't you just fight for your own civil rights without always having to say, I want to fight for the country? So this complexity of people fighting for their democratic rights in this country, which is so moving, and then thinking they have to sell it to the system. And you and I were talking earlier about your view that this is in some way situated in a conservative mindset right now, the emphasis on gay marriage.
Well, yeah. I mean, aside from the fact that I believe that it's very much a part of the religious fervor that has really swept this country in such a way that even without entering into a church, the M word, marriage, carries with it a kind of moralistic, hierarchical validation, which perhaps civil union would avoid across the board. And interestingly, I should note that yesterday's, again, New York Times had a very interesting article on the trend in Europe, even among heterosexual couples, against marriage but for civil unions as a means of not avoiding commitment, but of avoiding the cultural baggage and the historical background that marriage in some of its more oppressive ways represents. If I could just for a quick minute mention that I'm finding myself helped by sorting through these issues in two books that I'm currently looking at, one by John Boswell, which I mentioned in that op-ed piece, Same-Sex Unions in Pre-Modern Europe, and the other is by the historian Nancy Cott. The book is called Public Vows, A History of Marriage and the Nation, and they're really excellent in terms of background regarding not only the history of marriage per se, but alternative options, including civil unions, and I highly recommend them, being myself also a PhD in history.
Well, my wife, Leanne Hurst Mann, who's also the PhD in architecture, and a very strong feminist, she also thinks it's important to read Engels, The Origins of Family, Private Property in the State, because isn't some of this emphasis on marriage rooted in a patriarchal division of private property that at one point was collective property, and the way that capitalism even breaks it down into the need to determine lineage and ownership and therefore, quote, marriage.
Well, yeah, I mean, we all want hospital visitation rights. We all want insurance benefits. We all want to be able to share, say, pensions or Social Security guarantees for children who are adopted or not. But what my fear is that these are great social advances if secured by everyone, though I would prefer that they not be based at all on marital status, and that the rush to marriage strikes me as a kind of quasi-privatized attempt to guarantee these rights, but under the cover of an institution which, as you're implying from Engels on, isn't necessarily necessarily liberating, however nice it might be for some.
Well, that's, you know, the historical dilemma of, you know, of all the people who have certain benefits in the United States, like white people, heterosexuals, is one has to be very careful to not just defend abstractly, but defend really the right of people to participate in these democratic rights, even if some members of the oppressed community want to urge you not to participate in it. It's really important to have the right, and then to determine what you want to do with the right.
Absolutely. I mean, if I could just add one thing to that. I see, for example, the case with the military. You mentioned people justifying this, well, I can fight for my country, why can't I be married? Well, as long as we have a military, I suppose I want gay people to have equal rights with regard to it, but it doesn't mean that I'm pushing young people to rush off and join the military. We'll have a kind of constant normalizing through the association with these institutions, and I can only imagine a kind of situation where there'll be a kind of moral hierarchy, even among gay people, where you'll have veterans who are now married being held in some higher status or esteem than their single companions, other people in the community.
Yeah, so, non-combatant companions, right?
Yeah, oh, that's a good way of putting it, too.
Right.
You know, and I really am happy for everyone who's getting married. After 23 years of a good, committed relationship, but which has had its ups and downs like all, I'm happy to see people going through that commitment. But I was also struck by, if only as many people who are wandering through the halls of the San Francisco City Hall would, for example, and perhaps they are, contact the governor, whose most recent budget would limit further access to the ADAP program, which is the AIDS Drug Assistance Program for low-income people. Currently, 24,000 about people are enrolled in that program, and it's saving their lives. If the budget as proposed goes through, There will be no further additions to that list, but people will be put on a wait until, obviously, someone goes off, which would mean a kind of death watch.
Well, exactly. And I mean, the question of how social movements get bifurcated in a way that the system, well, the system in this case is not. This is San Francisco, which is a far away from the system, offers certain progressive choices while the system is taking away the guts of it. I wanted quickly, Ty, to move to this national debate question that I've been sort of pursuing through a lot of the guests, which is, here's my worst fear. My view of the United States is it's a white racist settler state, that it's been shaped from its inception through genocide and slavery,
mm-hmm.
and that the white male Christian heterosexual man is been shaped in such a way that his psychic value is primarily as a hater, as an anti-Semite, as a misogynist, as a homophobe, as a racist, and an imperialist. And this voter, this mad dog voter that they call the Reagan Democrat, the Democrats don't know what to do with him. So what the Democrats are trying to do to pacify the savage beast is constantly say, you know, you don't have a job, it's the economy, stupid, George Bush is for the rich, we're for the poor, we're for the middle class, because, you know, the working class in this country doesn't even want to be working class, it's got to be called middle class. And then, when you do the polls, that same NASCAR father, as the new ridiculous term
is
called,
yeah.
says, you know what, I'd rather beat up a gay person. You know what, I think that ending gay marriage is more important to me, and I'd rather vote for George Bush than John Kerry, because John Kerry's from Massachusetts, and I heard Massachusetts,
well,
you know, blah, blah, blah. What
do
you think?
You may be right, but I'm not so sure that it is as clearly so. Not only do I see certain cracks in the current regime's facade widening, but I believe, really, that it may have come to a point where even that southern white guy with the pickup truck and the Confederate flag decal who Howard Dean got in trouble talking about in these respects. I'm not so sure that that is as uniformly true, what you're saying, as it might have been, given the economic downturn and the loss of jobs. I don't know. I'm from the Midwest originally, Peoria, Illinois, and I go back and I also am visited by people, family members from there, and it's a different world. It's not perfect, but by far, there's hardly a person who doesn't know a gay person. And these cross all class and racial lines in a way perhaps that is unique in terms of divisions within our country. So I'm somewhat hopeful, actually, that the economic realities can not only be appealed to, but are in fact more solidly understood by those who would perhaps in other times have more conveniently fallen prey to scapegoating whomever.
Well, I hope you're right, and don't think you are. I mean, I think that the way to understand economics in this country, from my point of view, is that the economic base of the country, which is imperialism, does drive the so-called superstructure, which is people's attitudes. But I think people are so tied to empire today, so tied to the ideology of imperialism, and so deformed psychologically, ethically, morally, that there's something in the DNA of this country, as I said, that's a country of haters and a country of people that thrive off the suppression of the oppressed and the suppression of those who are different.
Oh, sure. And we're living in a period now with the convenient use of September 11th as a way in which to say that there is black and white, right and wrong, and no gray in between. So I get your point. I guess I'm just a bit more hopeful that that people are recognizing their own realities and not playing or being played to so easily as you're suggesting.
Well, what we have in common is that I think we have to push John Kerry and whoever else his running mate is to take on the civil rights of gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender people squarely and openly, to take on the Republican Party and to say that this is a human rights and civil rights issue, and you can kiss my you-know-what, but take a strong stand on it and not try to deflect
it by simply talking
about the economy.
I think that Kerry can be, in a way, accused, on the one hand, of trying to make an end run around this issue with his opposition to marriage but his support of civil unions. On the other, as a historian, I actually appreciate the nuance of that position, as I think I was trying to suggest earlier. So we need to push him. Kucinich and Sharpton, I guess, are the only two who are overtly pro-gay marriage or pro-marriage for all. But I actually am quite happy, even if it's being used politically, not to confront the issue full steam right now. I'm happy with the idea of civil unions, and I think it would be good. It may well be that the right wing has it right, for all the wrong reasons, that gays entering into such unions, even if not called marriage, would not undermine anyone's individual union. Rather, it would reformulate the whole understanding of what commitment means.
Well, Ty, listen, I want to thank you for being a very original voice on the subject, and as with a lot of other things on Voices from the Frontlines, this is a theme that we want to develop more. I myself want to learn more about by having guests like yourself on the show.
Well, and I'm still learning, too. Again, I suggest highly the two books by Boswell and by Nancy Cott on these issues. They're very informative.
And how can people get can people send you an email and get your op-ed?
Oh, sure. I can be reached at Echo Bamboo, that's all one word, ECHOBAMBOO, at sbcglobal.net.
That was Ty Geltmaker, and thanks so much, Ty, for being on the show.
Thank you, Eric.
Take good care.
And we'll be right back with Luis Sanchez just after this break.